Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You're listening to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, taking you backstage and behind the scenes at the biggest hits on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I talk to Joe Iconis, the cult favorite composer behind the musical Be More Chill, now playing off-Broadway. The show came and went quietly in 2015 at Two River Theater in New Jersey, but 3 years later, the original score has racked up a whopping 100 million streams, driven by a national and international fan base that has bought advanced tickets to this new production of Be More Chill to the tune of $1.2 million. Which is an astonishing number for a little off-Broadway show that, purportedly, no one's ever heard of. Iconis is here with me in the studio to talk about his work, his fans, the performers he calls his family, and what's next. Hi, Joe. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah.
So, to get the kind of big question out of the way for all the aspiring musical theater creators out there, how do you create a grassroots hit musical? How do you do that?
There are a few steps to doing that. The first one is to write a musical.
Right.
And then the next step is to have it become a viral sensation.
Right. Well, yeah. How does that happen?
I do not know. The hilarious thing is that I, as the writer of one, I could not tell you how one goes about doing it. And I certainly did not try.
Right.
I didn't set out to write a viral, you know, grassroots musical. It just kind of happened.
It might not even be possible, right? I don't know how that...
I don't think so. I mean, it's probably possible. Like, now that it's happened, I feel like we'll see, like, a lot of people really try to, like, engineer the very, like, organic and authentic thing that happened with Be More Chill. And so then once people start doing that, maybe then I'll be able to, like, you know, figure out how it's actually done.
So you don't have a theory about, like, oh, it was referred on YouTube, something, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
You know, I think it was a few things. I think it was sort of like a perfect storm of shows that were sort of popular around the same time that had some, like, crossover with my work and Be More Chill in particular.
Like,
you
what?
Know, like, The Lightning Thief is a musical that has a fan base that definitely intersects with the Be More Chill fan base.
And the book writer is the same guy.
So Joe Trace, the book writer of Be More Chill, collaborated on The Lightning Thief with a whole bunch of people who I often work with. And so here, the score of The Lightning Thief was written by this guy, Rob Rokicki, who's a good buddy of mine, who's in my band. And George Salazar was in The Lightning Thief, and it was directed by Stephen Brackett, who directed Be More Chill. So there's all this sort of, like, crossover.
Yeah, George Salazar, we should say, is... he's not technically the star of the show, but he is the actor that definitely everybody cheered at when he came out. He is the kind of breakout star, let's say, right now.
For sure. You know, and George kind of was like the eye of the storm as far as, like, what happened with Be More Chill a year ago. And I think that was because George's song in Be More Chill is the song called Michael in the Bathroom.
Right.
And that was the thing that initially turned people on to the show. You know, it's everyone's entry point. Initially, was through that song.
And what was your experience of it? Take us through the experience of it. First of all, it was a commission, right? It was how did they bring the novel to you? Had you read the novel? What was
the novel happened before the commission happened, right? The novel was
your discovery of the novel.
My discovery of the novel. Yes. The novel was given to me by my agent. Just in a very sort of, like, he had read it and he said, I think there's something here. I think you might be into this. I could see you getting excited about this material. And he never really does that. He hasn't really done it since. You know, it was sort of this, so it was such a random thing. And I read the book and it was a very, like, no brainer. You know, I read it and I felt like, oh yeah, this is something I can turn into a musical.
Can you identify kind of what exactly about it you thought, oh yeah.
For sure. A few things. I think
We should say, actually, we should talk about the plot a little. Actually, explain the plot while you explain to me what you responded to in it.
Absolutely. So Be More Chill is about a teenager named Jeremy Heer, and he is like the least special teenager who ever lived. There's nothing remarkable about him. And he finds out that there is this thing called a squip. And a squip is this Japanese supercomputer inside a pill, and teenagers everywhere swallow the squip, and then the supercomputer implants in their brain, and a voice tells them how to behave. And so Jeremy finds out that, oh, all these kids who like have it together in high school have it together because there's this Japanese supercomputer that's telling them how to go about their lives. And so that's essentially the plot of Be More Chill. And the novel written by the late great Ned Vizzini really excited me because of the characters, first and foremost. You know, I loved that they were these teenage characters that felt in some ways they were archetypes, but they were really sort of like falling in between the lines. Like they're all kind of messy, and they were characters that felt real, even though they were living in this heightened world. And I just immediately responded to that. You know, it's a story that's solely populated by kids who feel like misfits, kids who feel like they don't quite fit in anywhere. In my career, I've naturally returned to characters like that, be they, you know, high school kids or, you know, adults or animals, whatever. It's like I right. continually write about people who feel like they don't belong. And so that was like an immediate, like, oh, yeah, I love these people that I'm reading about. And then the idea of these really, like, you know, relatable, specific characters kind of bumming around in this sci-fi story was really exciting to me. And, you know, I've written shows about young people before. I love writing young characters. But the thing that was like, oh, man, this is a show to spend some years working on was the opportunity to talk about these huge issues and these issues that, you know, that young people experience in a very real / heightened way, but that, you know, adults experience as well, to explore these issues through this lens of like a sci-fi right. comedy, yeah. you know, which was really different than other stuff I've done.
Yeah. And so you got a commission from Two River mm-hmm. in New Jersey, and
yeah, yeah.
then the show happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
So the show happened in the spring of 2015.
And a lot of the people who were in that production are now in it, this off-Broadway production?
Yeah, yeah, right? We're like half and half.
Half and half?
Yeah, yeah. And so...
Including George. Salazar.
Including, including Salazar, for real. You know, leading up to the opening of the show at Two River, everyone was really excited. It felt like there was a huge amount of momentum. I've been in this position a few times in my career where, like, I'm working on a new musical and everyone's like, oh, man, this one is going to blow up. Like, this is going to be the one that, right. like, you know, goes into New York and is at a fancy nonprofit and goes to Broadway and does that whole thing. And that was definitely there with Be More Chill. The audiences in Jersey were, like, loving it. They were all like, we've never seen anything like this. It felt like there was a real connection. And then we opened, and you know, we got a review in the Times that was sort of like meh, and that just like made everything disappear. Right. Which is what happens when you have a new musical that doesn't have any famous people and doesn't have a commercial producer attached, and isn't based on a bankable property. It just kind of goes away, and it was so disappointing. Everyone working on it was like the most sure that we were going to get to, you know, continue on with the show, and it didn't happen. And so it was this really, like, it was just a big disappointment for a while, you know. And the magic thing that happened is that Two River Theater said, even though the show is clearly not going on, we're really proud of it, and we want to preserve it. We want to make a cast album of the show. Ghostlight Records, Kurt Deutsch, who's been a big supporter of mine my whole career, he came to see the show, and he... felt similarly, he felt like, you know, the score deserved to be preserved on record. And so we made this album a couple months after we closed. Two River produced it, made it happen, and it was released the Halloween after we closed. So a few months after we closed, the album was out. And
this would have been Halloween 2015, yeah?
Mm-hmm, okay. Yeah. And so... The you know, the album, people liked it, but it was the kind of thing where the, you know, the amount of people who liked the Be More Chill cast album are the amount of people who you would think would like the cast album of a musical that no one had ever heard about that played for 5 weeks in New Jersey.
Right.
You know, it's like not, everyone was like perfectly thrilled, but like that everyone could, you know, fit in a club,
right,
probably like literally called 54 Below. Like that's everyone who cared about the Beemer Chill,
right,
album. And so it was just kind of there, you know, and I tried so hard to get the show back on a stage anywhere in the, you know, the subsequent years, and no one was interested, which I understand. And then in the spring of 2017, which is just like a little over a year ago, I just started noticing truly out of the blue social media attention for Be More Chill, and it was the kind of thing where I would get like tagged and, you know, an Instagram post about a character in the show, or people would be tweeting like lyrics, and it you know, I have a fairly healthy sort of culty fan base, you
yep.
know, and I've had that for a while, and so I've been lucky enough to you know, have people tell me they like my stuff and get excited about my work online. But this was like nothing like I had ever experienced before. And so it got to a point where, and everything was about Michael in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where I texted George Salazar, who, you know, I'm very good friends with and who I work with all the time. And I was like, did you do something with Be More Chill? Like, is something happening that I don't know about? And he said, I was going to ask you the same thing. I'm getting all of this Be More Chill attention. The same thing happened with Joe Trace. And so the three of us were kind of like, what, you know, what's going on? Everyone thought someone else had been doing something, but no one had. And so it sort of, you know, started growing and growing and growing. And when it first started, you know, it was the kind of thing where I called like Shigaboom, Ghostlight, who put out the album, and said, you know, there, like, something is happening with this album. Like, people are actually listening to it, and it feels like it's, for some reason, in, you know, in the culture in a way that it has not been in the last 2 years. And, you know, Ghostlight, they're amazing, but their initial response was sort of like, oh, yeah, you know, that's cute. I'm glad that, you know, some kid in Idaho tweeted at you, and now you think that, you know,
right.
you know, you think that you're going to be on top of the world or something. But then, of course, you know, within a matter of weeks, like, numbers started coming in, and then Ghostlight was like, wait a minute. Like, people are actually buying this. Why are
right.
they buying it? And so then, you know, Kurt Deutsch then called me, and he's like, are you doing something with Be More Chill? What's going on? I was like, man, I don't know. It's just happening.
Right.
And so it...
And we should say that the fans do an extraordinary amount of fan art. There are these things called animatics, which are essentially animated storyboards,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's, you know, one for Michael in the Bathroom. And I guess the rest of the score made by the same...
Oh, all of it.
I mean, yeah. And I'm told there were action figures at a recent performance of homemade action figures, obviously, of characters in the
show.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah, I have seen the most extraordinary art
yep.
created by kids and adults based on Be More Chill. I can't even begin to tell you. It's extraordinary. And also, like, the fan fiction is also a huge thing, which is a world that I knew nothing about.
Also, I should point out that I have never seen security and crowds at the Signature Center waiting to stage door actors coming out. I mean, the fan reaction is extremely vocal in the room, and then
yeah.
extremely sort of rabid, but not in a scary way.
No.
Or at least it didn't seem in a scary way. It just seemed very avid and
yeah.
very, very excited.
Yeah, you know, and I think that the first few previews especially had a particularly, you know, excitable
sure. base. And people have come from all around the country.
Oh, yeah.
Also, it sounds like around the world. If they haven't yet, they will be. I know their tickets have been bought from around the world.
Yesterday, I met someone from Australia who came specifically to see the show.
Wow.
At the matinee. At the evening, I met multiple people from Thailand who did not know each other, who were there.
Wow.
Sweden, I mean, literally Brazil, like all over. And we've played seven performances.
Yes. Yeah. We're early in the run right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that part of the passion at these early shows too, is that these are people who have truly loved this piece of theater for a year, and they've just never seen it. Like it's what's so crazy about it is that it's the, you know, so at every performance, multiple people have said to me, like, oh, my God, I feel like I'm at Hamilton, you know, like, as right. far as the audience reaction. And it's that is not
that's not wrong.
Incorrect.
I was sitting in the middle of it the other night. Like, that's right.
Yeah. And it's just we have the reaction of like a mega hit show without having actually like had the hit show first. You know, it's like what happens to a show right. when it becomes that kind of hit.
Yeah.
There was never a show in the first place. And so we have this bizarre situation where like we're in early previews and we have this audience that's like going nuts for it.
Right.
Which is, you know, both like good and bad in some ways.
Let's talk a little bit about your process and how you work. Which comes first for you, music or lyrics?
They both kind of come at the same time. Mm. You know, it's weird. I'm a really messy writer. And so
what does that mean?
It means
like literal mess or just in terms of snippets here and there?
All of those things you just said. Yeah. it means that I, for starters, I don't have like a set time of day that I write. You know, I know writers who are super rigid and like, yeah, I wake up and then I have 6 hours of writing and that's when I write. And I just can't do that, you know? And so for me, when I do write, I'll usually like obsess over an idea for a long time. And then when I actually put pen to paper, I feel like I've already like sort of written the song in my head before I actually start, you know, writing it. And usually I'll start with a hook or some major idea. And that will always be actually lyric driven. It'll be the words. And then in those words, there's usually some sort of implied music in my head. And then I just kind of go back and forth, you know, and I bounce around a lot when I write. So I'll start, you know, at a coffee shop, and then I'll go to a piano, and then I'll, you know, go to a bar, and then I'll pace around my apartment. And I like to sort of, you know, bop around as I'm making stuff.
How long does it take to write a song? If you've done this pre-thinking, how long does then a song usually take you?
It's truly different for every song. You know, it's like the ultimate, depending on the needs of the patient, it's going to take as long or as short. You know, there are songs in Be More Chill that feel like they've taken, you know, 4 years to write because I, you know, worked on them in New Jersey, you know, leading up to the show and couldn't get it right. And I'm still working on it here and, you know, still not getting it right. And so it's like, oh, that song's a year in the making. And then there's other songs, like there's a song in the show called, A Guy That I'd Kind of Be Into that I had to write in a pinch when we were in rehearsals for the first production. And it was just one of those things where, like, we had this time to stage this number. I knew I needed a number there. And I just, like, if I don't write this now, this thing's never going to end up in the show. And so I, you know, ran away, and in 40 minutes, I had the whole song.
Right.
So, like, it's just, and it's always a surprise to me. I never know how quickly something will come or how, you know, torturous the process will be.
And what makes a good musical theater song, in your view?
I think that a good musical theater song is one that takes the audience on a journey of some kind. It feels kind of like cheesy to even say that, but it's the truth. You know, I think a good musical theater song, you start in one place and you finish in another, and that's kind of like the simplest thing. You know, you should be moving somewhere somehow. You know, and I think that the sort of common notion about musical theater writing and musical theater songs is that, you know, if the song doesn't move the plot forward, you have to cut it. But I don't always think that. I think if the song is moving a character forward or, you know, or whatever, that's totally valid, you know? But it's that. It's movement, I think.
Right.
And rhyme. I'm like the biggest stickler for rhyme.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I get made fun of so badly.
By who? Who are the people, like, who are making fun of your rhymes?
Like other musical theater writers.
Right.
I like literally feel picked. I feel like I'm like Poindexter over here trying to, you know,
trying to make rhymes.
Perfect rhymes. Yeah. What I oh my God, I've had so many truly like fights about it because I'm like kind of a bitch about it. But I'm proud of that. I've said so many times, like, there's no such thing as a perfect rhyme because it either rhymes or it doesn't. Like,
wow. All right. Those are fighting words.
I mean, but it's like, it, you know, it just, it's language, it's syllables, it's a word rhymes or it does not.
Aside from perfect rhyme, what in musical theater would you like to see more of?
I would like to see more of musicals that are populated by characters and people who don't look like robots, who don't look like sort of sparkly musical theater robots. Mm-hmm. I like seeing interesting, strange human beings on a stage, and I like when those interesting and strange human beings have material written for them that is worthy of their strangeness. Mm-hmm. So that's something I would love to see. I would love to see more just personality-driven work. You know, I feel like a lot of musicals that I see, especially in the commercial sphere, they feel a little bit like musicals made by committee. You know, it's like I feel like sometimes you see a show, and it's like I can hear the conversations, you know, behind the scenes about which number is going to offend the least amount of people, and it just gives everything this sameness that kind of bugs me. And I think what's so funny about it is that it seems without fail, the shows of every season that are like the hit shows are the ones that don't do that. Like, they're always the shows that are strange and that didn't follow the rules and that feel like, you know, the shows that people like love to call like edgy in quotation marks and downtown in quotation marks. Those are always the ones that are like the successful ones. But it seems, you know, for me at least, it feels like as someone who definitely, you know, lives in that world, it's so hard to get people to get behind that kind of writing, you know. So I just want to see more shows that will make it easier for me to get my shows produced. Really. I'm just totally selfish.
Yeah, no. I feel like being a creator of musical theater is one of the hardest, aspects of the business to break into, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just in part because, first of all, you have to find collaborators you like, right,
yeah.
and click with.
Yeah.
And then just in order to get people to hear or see your work, you have to like get some actor, like hire the actors and rent a studio and hire some musicians and record a demo. And mm-hmm. it just feels like the barrier to entry is even higher than it is for a lot of other. What's your advice for aspiring musical theater creators who want to break into it?
Yeah. My advice is to immerse yourself in the community, whatever that means to you, or whatever that, you know, be that like the theater community in New York or wherever you're from. You know, it's hard because as you said, there's no rule book, you know, there's no how to become a musical theater writer. It's so nebulous and it's so scary. And for me, the thing that saved me and the thing that allowed me to enter into the world was literally just finding people who were doing the same thing and connecting with them and learning from them and being open. You know, if I didn't go to the NYU graduate musical theater writing program, I never would have been able to enter the musical theater world. Also because my personality, especially the time when I was sort of, you know, finishing undergrad and going into grad school, I was like super reserved. I never thought that I was the sort of person who would be able to like sing in front of people or, you know,
which we should say you do regularly. You perform as Iconos and Family.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. 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 All the time. And that felt so beyond anything I would ever imagine doing. The thought of like going up to someone and introducing myself and being like, "Hi, I'm Joe. I wrote a musical. You should do it." Like truly just beyond terrifying to me, like panic attack city. And so for me, going to that program and just being around all these other people who are writing musicals and are for the most part just as confused, made me feel like, okay, this is something that human beings do and they start somewhere and this is that place. And then, you know, you just learn how to like swim in the pond, or you learn like this isn't for me. And you get out of there, you know?
And the Anne Family of Iconos and Family that you perform with, is mm-hmm. that is that sort of an outgrowth of that community that you found? Is that how you found a lot of those people?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I first graduated school, I had a musical that was in development with a nonprofit theater, and I sort of felt like, oh, cool. My musical is in development with this theater. It's going to open off Broadway. It'll transfer to Broadway. I'm going to be set for life. Right. Awesome. And like, clearly that didn't happen. And it's like not the way it works. And I didn't know about like musical theater development timelines when I graduated. And so after, you know, like a year, I felt like, wait a minute, I'm writing all of these songs and I have all of this stuff and no one's hearing it. And that doesn't seem correct. And so I was like, I want to just put on a show. And it came from like the most, you know, just the cheesy, like, you know, let's put on a show in the backyard kind of right. thing. I didn't know how to do that at all. And so I found a theater company that was, you know, run by someone I knew and was like, hey, can, like, I want to do a show with my songs. How do we do that? And they helped me out. And so then that's how this sort of like Iconis and Family thing was born.
Right.
And or just as far as like me doing shows was born.
Yeah.
And the more and more I started doing those shows, the more and more I started meeting, you know, actors and people and kind of formed this group, you know, and it was just literally just actors or musicians who I would see and I was a fan of, and I would just say, hey, you know, I saw you perform at this gig, or I saw you in this play, and I think you're great. And if you want to come sing with me, let's do it, you know. And at the time when we first started doing the shows, like 2007, 2008, there wasn't quite as much of a musical theater concert scene as there is now.
Yeah.
And so it sort of felt like this like kind of new thing, you know. And even in the context of the musical theater concert scene, most of the shows that I would go see as far as new musical theater shows felt like recitals to me. Like, they always felt like, you know, like a night of songs by such and such composer with like music stands, which is totally valid. But I always felt like, oh, I don't want to do that. I want to do something that feels like a cross between a like sort of classic cabaret, like, you know, Don't Tell Mama in 1989 cabaret, yeah. and like a full blown rock concert. And so I just sort of approached it in a different way from the get go. And yeah.
What's next for Be More Chill after it's run off Broadway?
I don't know. You know, we're really hoping that it moves on to another life post off Broadway. Of course, that's like not totally in the control of certainly not in the control of myself.
Right.
A lot of things need to, you know, happen. A lot of things need to line up. But I mean, we're, you know, we're knock wood, we're doing super well off Broadway as far as things like ticket sales and, you know, and audience reaction. And
yeah,
all that.
Really unusually well for a show that. As you said, you know, played 5 weeks in New Jersey at the end.
Yeah.
Up until now.
Yeah. Right. And there's no famous people in it. And
right.
there's no, I mean, you know, like sort of theater, like Will Roland is theater famous.
Right. Will Roland Jason, plays the I was about to say title character, but his name is
Jeremy.
Jeremy, thank you.
Yeah.
And
he's leading man.
Yeah, leading yeah. man. And he was in the original, or at least in the Broadway cast of Dear Evan Hansen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even that, and what's hilarious, though, is that people have talked about Will Roland as sort of being, like, star casting, which, I mean, is hilarious to me for so many reasons. you know, because it's, like, that's also, like, such a theater thing, or, like, these people that we build up and be like, oh, well, you know, you have to put, like, this, you know, quote-unquote star in the show, and it's like, nobody knows who these people are,
yeah.
and nobody knows who Will Roland, no one knows who I am,
right.
But whatever, but Will is someone who Will's been in, like, the Iconis and Family stuff for 10 years, you know, I've known Will for literally 10 years and have worked with him on so many shows. And the fact that now he's like the leading man in my musical and people talk about him like it's star casting is just the coolest, most hilarious thing.
Right.
I love it.
Well, I can't wait to see what happens with the show.
Me too.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It was
fun. Nice to talk to you. That was Joe Iconis on his popular new musical, Be More Chill, now playing at Off-Broadway's Signature Center. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft in 2 weeks, I talk to Andy Carl, the Broadway favorite now starring in the new musical adaptation of Pretty Woman. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
not there.
No.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.